Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Rootscast. I'm Jeff Daverman, the creator of Root Concepts, owner of Infamous Network, and we are here discussing the ideas behind Root Concepts and how it applies to the lives of our fan base, the people that we work with, and the folks who love what we do and want to use our artwork to express themselves and succeed in their own artistic endeavors. What's up, everybody? This is Jeff Daverman, and I'm joined here again for another episode of Rootscast. I got my friend Jacob Devaney with me back from the road, and it's been a little while since I've seen Jacob, but last time I saw him here, he was heading out up to Telluride on the beginning of some huge adventures. He's going to do a loop, and so he's going to tell us a little bit about that. I've been traveling with Unify and with all of your entire Living Folklore puppets and everybody having a good time at your festival tour that you've been doing for a long time now. So why don't you tell us about Telluride Jazz Fest, first of all. That was at the beginning of August, right?
Yeah, so, you know, Living Folklore is it's a ceremonial, theatrical organization. It's based on the idea of making stories come to life, and that each of us has a role to play in the unfolding story of history. So, you know, let's make it a good story for the future so that people look back and say, wow, these ones that came before us did some amazing work to pave the way for a beautiful world that we live in now. And so the Jazz Festival and a lot of the festivals that I do in Telluride are centered around working with the children and creating parades with big giant puppets and stilt walkers and circus performers and storytelling and so forth. And it is a visual representation of the music that I love, which is jazz and a lot of Americana music, live music. I love all sorts of music, actually. So working at the Jazz Fest is amazing, and I really enjoy being in an environment. The reason I love jazz so much is because it's something that was created out of many different cultural elements coming together, and that coming together and all getting mixed up in the same pot causes you to have to collaborate and improvise and find ways to make things work together, to listen and respond and so forth. So jazz musicians do that with music, and cultural creatives do that with all forms of medium, including internet, including all
puppets.
Puppets.
So, you know, you've been going to Telluride for now the better part of 20 years, taking Living Folklore up there and participating in the festivals up there. And so obviously there's something that pulls you back there, and you've had lots of experiences up there through the years. What is an experience from the 41st Telluride Jazz Fest this year?
I don't know what number it was this year. But
it's on your shirt. That's where I got that from.
It is the 41st. So, wow, I was thinking you're really smart. I really enjoy just, again, this is something to me, everybody sees it in a different light, but I recognize and understand that humans, we're social beings, and there's something deep in our DNA that calls us to want to camp on the land and sleep under the stars and sit around the fire and tell stories or jam and make music, or, you know, maybe it's, you know, drink a little whiskey to warm you up or whatever that might be. Make food together in your campground, wear your finest clothes, dance, laugh, smile, and celebrate life. And so that's something that really goes back to like the old potlatch, to the powwow idea, to the just the gathering of the tribes kind of thing. And so in our modern world, you know, we buy tickets and we go to these events, but in our soul and our DNA and our spirit, this is hearkening back to something that is just universal to all cultures, all people. And I'm never let down by my experiences at these events, and I really see them as a deeply important and spiritual and regenerative for our sense of belonging and being part of community, and not just the human community, but being part of the community of the trees and the water and the stars and the animals and the rocks. And that's what happens when you camp and when you set your whole normal day-to-day aside and go and participate in these festivals. And I love that they're also participatory in that everyone shows up in their finest color to give their best vibe, their best energy, and their most creative, open-hearted self to a collective experience. And that I love. And Telluride is probably one of the best places in the world, in my opinion, for that, because it's one of the most beautiful valleys high in the Rockies.
Mm-hmm. So just before we move on, were there any specific acts that really stood out for you this year that really you can recall that you're just so pumped to that have seen?
Well, Mavis Staples was amazing. And of course, there was Dr. John showed up to play with the original Meters.
Nice.
And Art Neville was there. And I love the Meters. I love New Orleans music. Of course, I love Dr. John as well. And New Orleans, of course, has a very special history in the creation of blues and jazz, because that's a place where Native Americans and Africans first started drumming together creating this combination of the four-beat powwow drum with the polyrhythms of the Cuban and African rhythms. And out of that was the birth of the blues. So it's a very, it's American art form that is the blues that gave birth to jazz and rock and roll and everything since there. So,
So speaking of drumming and camping, from the Jazz Fest, Unify took you up into Oregon, was it?
Yes.
And so you were in Oregon for the eclipse that happened at the end of last month. Mm-hmm. And so where did you stay and what were you doing there with Unify?
So the Oregon eclipse was really, on the tail end of everything I was just saying about ceremony and community and the powwow and the gathering of the tribes kind of feeling that you get from festivals. The Symbiosis event was pretty amazing because here the producers recognize that there's going to be an eclipse and that there's a 17-mile strip across the country where you'll get to see the full eclipse. And what they did was they organized an event to happen during that time. And
what was the event?
It was the Symbiosis Eclipse Gathering in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's what it was called.
And I love the producers of that event.
So what was the, can you just kind of describe the scene a little bit?
Well, it was really out Big Prairie, I think it was called, in eastern Oregon. It was pretty much out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody had cell coverage, which was a curse and a blessing. And they built these amazing stages. And I know the Dewlab folks, that put on Lightning in a Bottle and some other West Coast festivals, built some incredible structures as well. I don't know all of the teams and individuals that built the structures, but I know that it was out of this world. And one of the most amazing parts of it was they literally built an amphitheater / arena with a temple to the sun and a temple to the moon. So it's this whole idea of celebrating our place in the world, our place in the cosmos, our place in time, with decorating the land and beautifying. And I really got to hand it to those guys because I think it's just amazing that they're also tuned into the same idea that a festival, it could just be a drunken festival that people come and get drunk or whatever they do, but these individuals that are putting on a lot of these visionary festivals, especially on the West Coast, but all over the world, really, they actually understand that this is a deeply ancestral expression of community and creativity and a place where it's kind of a lab for culture and community. There was permaculture workshops, and there was yoga workshops and dance movement therapy workshops and herbal medicine workshops, in addition to all the stages and the music. So
neat. So I wonder if you can tell me, just, you know, the eclipse itself was like literally only a few minutes of full eclipse, and so that's what all of this entire event was focused around. And so what was your experience in those brief moments that you had, you know, traveled all that way to experience?
Well, I really enjoy when humans take the opportunity to apply stories and archetypes and metaphors to our own personal life. And so you have, literally, you have the moon blocking the sun. And, you know, the moon, a lot of people consider it because the moon pulls the tides. People consider the moon is at nighttime. So the moon can relate to the darkness. It can relate to water or emotion or to the dreams. And, of course, the sun is light. And so these are metaphors. But when we try to apply the metaphors of our cosmos to our own inner being and our own personal lives, I think it's very powerful. And so as we were coming into the eclipse, of course, it's in the middle of the day and it's getting dark. And so the metaphor for me and for a lot of people, everybody, it's like a one size fits all. Everybody gets to decide how it applies to them. But that has to do with looking at the darkness. And so for me personally, I was really looking at a lot of things in my life that are painful, that I maybe don't want to look at or that I wish weren't there, and just really trying to be present with that and consider what it means to just really embrace darkness. I mean, seeds gestate in the darkness when they're planted, and even in the winter when it's cold and dark. So darkness is not our enemy. It's actually a part of growth. So I did a lot of reflecting on my own darkness and the things that I'm working through in my life, and really asking for solutions and ways to release what is old and what is no longer serving me and what is heavy, and welcome a new light. And so at that moment that the eclipse was complete in totality, it was a really beautiful moment of just kind of, I'm in the dark, I'm with all of that, and I'd like to welcome a new chapter, a new light. And so with so many people doing that in their own way, you know, relative to their own personal story, it's very powerful and very beautiful. And to feel synchronized with the people around you, but to also feel synchronized literally with the turning of the planets. So it was really, really powerful.
So, okay. So you had this great experience up in Oregon, and then you went to another amazing experience, which is Burning Man. And I'm sure there are a lot of similarities and a lot of differences in those two experiences, and especially experiencing them back to back must have been kind of mind-blowing, I'm thinking. And so I'm wondering if you can just kind of speak to how your Burning Man experience was similar to your eclipse experience, and how is it different? And then also, you know, you were at both of these experiences representing Unify. And so what was it that you were doing with Unify to promote Unify?
Okay, well, they were actually very different experiences.
Even though you just talked about the metaphor of the light, you know, the darkness and the light, and I think that the metaphor of Burning Man, where you burn it, you know, the phoenix comes out of the ashes, are similar ideas and similar ways to, you know, kind of touch
the
on
past,
yeah, and kind of touch on the things you're talking about, of these things that are part of our history, part of our DNA going back.
Well, I agree. And one of the things, this is my first time at Burning Man. And like a lot of people that go to Burning Man and a lot of people that don't go to Burning Man, I'm very aware how carbon heavy it is for all these people to drive and bring their RVs out into the desert, and then they're burning a bunch of stuff, and they're, you know, that's wood. That's, those are trees that got cut down that are lumber that they build when they burn the man. And at the same time, fire is such a gathering around fire and witnessing, like you said, the phoenix rise from the ashes, and this notion of fire has this ability to, I mean, it can heat you up, it could burn down your house, it can warm your food, it can burn your skin. So it's not inherently good or bad, but it has a transformative quality, and it is one of the core, you know, fire, earth, air, and water, and humans have gathered around fire since the beginning of time. So this year's Burning Man, we were brought along because UNIFI was really involved with Standing Rock, and we worked with a Burning Man camp called Red Lightning, and with Burning Man being about radical self-reliance, the Burning Man crew wanted to go and support at Standing Rock last fall with their fight for water and against the DAPL pipeline. And so you have this very interesting thing. Of course, the festival community is a very different thing in many ways, but its heart and soul is, there's a lot of similarity. And so, of course, the Red Lightning crew and the Burning Man people have very different understanding of spirituality, and they're different culturally and so forth. But when the UNIFI crew and the Red Lightning crew showed up at Standing Rock last year, there was a lot of beautiful collaboration, and they showed up, or we showed up, in support, UNIFI doing media outreach and also helping on the ground with different infrastructure projects and other organizations that were building composting toilets, and Red Lightning brought a dome and a satellite that helped the media get out from that spot. And so there was this, a collaboration of very different elements that went on there. And of course, Standing Rock is about water. There are ancient indigenous tribe, the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota people. And Burning Man is the desert. It's not water, it's fire. And it's a new kind of cultural expression. And there's a lot of people from Silicon Valley and San Francisco, and a lot of white people and people of privilege. And so in many ways, completely opposite end of the spectrum from each other. And this year, at the end of Standing Rock, a lot of the elders in Standing Rock said, you know, bring this prayer everywhere, bring it to your own communities, connect with your local indigenous tribes, connect with your local water sources, and bring this message. So the Red Lightning crew very courageously brought a bunch of indigenous people to Burning Man, which, like I said, very courageous, because you have in Burning Man, you have, you know, people running around naked, and you've got all kinds of art, and it's not a powwow, it's not a traditional indigenous gathering. So to be able to create an environment that honors these elders and these indigenous people and their protocol is very tricky, and I'm very impressed with the way that everyone handled. Of course, there was some people that were not pleased with certain aspects of it, but that's what I was brought there for. There was a global drum prayer, and I have worked on a global drumming since 1994, and that was also in conjunction with the birth of the white buffalo. And so I was very happy to be part of an expression of different cultures all drumming together with a prayer of unity and an expression of our love for water and the elements that sustain our lives.
So what would you say is your takeaway having this cross-cultural experience at Burning Man?
Well, you know, we all love our cultural roots, but we have to be honest, culture itself is also always growing and evolving and adding on to itself. In that sense, just like a tree or, you know, anything in the natural ecosystem, there is a regenerative process that's happening within that, yeah, where, you know, we are eating up the dead and creating new life, and we are taking in new ideas and incorporating them. And if a tree is, if the seed for a tree blew into a little rock on the side of a cliff overlooking the ocean, and you look at that tree, you'll see that tree was shaped by the way the wind blew off the ocean. And there is this collaboration, this improvisation, this co-creation that occurs with individual humans, with collectives of humans, and also all around us in the ecosystem. So I thought that was really amazing. And of course, we're going to skin our knees learning to come together in unity, because that's not a human tradition. We have a long history. No culture can say they weren't oppressed. No culture can say they weren't the oppressor. And so we have a long history of conquest and war. And so to try to come together and mutually respect each other takes a lot of courage, and we're going to skin our knees in that process. And there were some skin knees, but there was also something really, really beautiful created in the process. So it was very magical, and I loved it.
Right on. So, okay, so you had a great experience at Burning Man, and then you headed back down to Telluride for Blues and Brews. And so since we already talked about Telluride, why don't you just give me briefly an act that stood out for you at Blues and Brews this year?
Well, I'll tell you, I have to say, I had never seen Samantha Fish before, and she, hands down, blew me away. I saw a lot of live music this summer.
All right.
I saw a lot of great acts, but I'll tell you, she plays the guitar like some sort of combination of Prince and Eric Clapton. She's an amazing show person. She's beautiful to watch, spunky and lively, her hair flying every direction, and she has the voice of, I don't even know who.
So who we're talking about here? Say her name again.
Samantha Fish. Look her up. Check her out.
Okay, so Samantha Fish.
If she just played the guitar that well, it'd be a great act. If she just sang that well, it would be a great act. But she does both. And I was spellbound, and that stood out to me. It was an amazing.
Fantastic. So Samantha Fish gets the endorsement of Jacob Devaney. Excellent. Okay, and then so I just want to shift gears here a little bit and talk about a little bit of the writing that you've been doing somehow on your travels. And I'm sure that all this traveling and all these experiences really does inform your writing. But you just published this article on HuffPost back on September 17th, entitled Regenerative Solutions for the Future of Humanity. And I think what I'd like you to do is just summarize what you mean when you talk about regenerative solutions, because that's not a really too common of a phrase, but I think it's a very intriguing idea. And so go ahead and just kind of tell me a little bit about what the article touches on, and we'll put a link to the article here with the podcast. But go ahead and let us know, what are you thinking about regenerative solutions for the future of humanity?
Okay, so let me give you just a little quick background on this. UNIFI is an open and collaborative organization. In the same way I spoke of jazz, in the same way I speak of different cultures and communities coming together, we've skinned our knees a lot. We're trying to figure this out. It's an emergent thing. We're trying to use an open, collaborative, improvisational structure. And sometimes we hit it out of the park, and other times we trip over our own shoelaces in the process. I love the larger network of people that we collaborate with, and we really try to focus on solutions. So we had a number of amazing campaigns this summer. One of them was the Rise for Syria campaign, which, we saw. We saw thousands of people going and protesting at airports and so forth over the Trump immigration ban. And we're coming around to that and say, if you really care about alleviating suffering for immigrants or refugees, then why don't you help us do something to create a solution? So riseforsyria.world is exactly that. It's saying, here's a way that we can actually alleviate suffering. And so the Rise for Syria campaign was a big deal. Early in the summer, we commemorated the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love. And in that, it's beautiful. You had the Beatles, the first globally broadcast program included the Beatles singing All You Need Is Love. So the first time that we could even communicate all over the world, that was the message. I think that's really beautiful. That was 50 years ago, and now we're doing the same thing using the internet. And in that process, I was introduced through one of my partners at Unify, Adil, introduced me to a woman named Melinda Wolf and brought forward this amazing idea of regenerative solutions in regards to addressing climate change in the era of Trump. And so that sparked a couple months of great back and forth, research, conversations. She's been hosting panels and having meetings with people also. And I get to be in this beautiful position to try to help convey some of these conversations through my writing on Huffington Post. And so regenerative solutions is about really acknowledging that sustainability is a great idea, and it might have worked really well for us if we were able to accomplish it 40 or 50 years ago. But the truth of it is, right now we are depleting resources on the planet at such an alarming rate, and we're seeing the early signs of climate change and the devastation that could be coming our way. And so what we really need to do is not necessarily sustainable or sustainability, which also is a political football now. It's got so much baggage attached to it, and it's relatively divisive in some ways for people. But we need to actually start looking at regenerative solutions. In other words, we need to reverse actively and quickly reverse some of the momentum that is happening towards our impact on the planet. And so that's where the idea of regenerative solution comes in. And it within it also acknowledges, you know, some basic things, like there are technologies that could potentially really help. Of course, the environmentalists and people like myself would just love to see us just plant millions and millions of trees and stop drilling for oil and so forth. But we have to really acknowledge we're in the era of Trump right now. And
we're still in the era of big oil, right? We're in the oil era, and the dollar is really, really connected with being in the fossil fuel era.
Absolutely. You know, some people say that our currency is a fiat currency, and there's another part of that story, too, that's worth considering, is that our dollar is backed with oil. And so it's kind of ridiculous to think that the oil-backed dollar will topple the oil industry. And let's be honest, you know, anything that the oil industry does not want to happen won't happen. They have such a grip on our governments right now and the policy. And it's hard to admit, and it can make us angry, but we have to really be honest about the situation. We have to consider solutions that acknowledge the reality that we're living in right now.
So when you say consider solutions, you have written in your article here a sentence that I'm just going to read to you and just get a little feedback from you on that. You say here, what is needed are initiatives and policy at all levels to enact change in our communities. And the United Nations Peace Week is just the place to begin that conversation. So we're right on the edge. We're right at the end of United Nations Peace Week as we record this. My first question is going to be, how is that just the place to begin the conversation? And then my second question is going to be, I'm wondering if you could speak directly to specific initiatives and or policies that would help our listeners kind of better understand also what you mean when you say regenerative solutions.
Okay, so, you know, first and foremost, there's a really beautiful template that I'm just at the very beginning of learning and understanding that I really, really strongly encourage other people to look into. It's very hopeful and inspiring to learn about the Sustainable Development Goals in the United Nations. And a group of very, very wise people kind of sat down and said, what are the biggest issues that humanity is facing and how do we address them moving forward? And so I'm really grateful to be able to work with an organization that is called, you know, For the Future of Humanity. And discussing the solutions is step one, being aware of the solutions is part of that as also. And calling your representatives, posting about it on social media. I mean, look, a lot of us are really upset. A lot of us are frustrated about the way things are going. It's real easy to complain. It's not real easy to just go out there and inspire people and put some solutions on the table. And look, we don't have time to really just sit and pout and complain that things aren't going our way. We need to acknowledge that things are going the way that they're going, and we need to work within that to put forward solutions. So what did I miss about some
Do you, question? Do you have any, is there anything that you could specifically speak to when you talk about initiatives and policy, when you're encouraging that in the article here? What are you referring to? Like, what would you actually like to see?
Okay, so if you're an activist at this point, and you want to go about things from the mindset of, you know, like maybe early activists in the 70s or something like that, that's 40 years ago now. This notion of being divisive, that's why I love the concept of unify. The notion of being divisive is not going to help us. We need to be collaborative and cooperative. And so when you want to bring forward an idea, it has to take into account, like I said, the stranglehold that the oil companies have on our government and our policies. So politicians that can bring forward proposals and resolutions that can get bipartisan support are going to be the politicians that and the policies that are going to really help us move towards solutions. We're going to get there. I feel confident about that, but we can't do it in the us versus them stance anymore. And so we have these a lot of beautiful things emerging. We have peer-to-peer relationships, which is not a top-down way, you know, that is emerging with cryptocurrencies, and blockchain is allowing possibility for direct democracy and kinds of communication that are not controlled centrally. So right now, central banks control so much of what's happening in the world, and democracy, as we all know, is very wounded right now. But the ability to utilize the technology that we currently have, the internet, and emerging technologies like blockchain or cryptocurrencies, which are currencies that are not backed in the dollar, are not backed in oil dollar or oil, backed in oil. And so, you know, if you have an oil dollar, then the incentive has to be around things that are consumption and oil and things like that. But if you can create currencies that incentivize other actions like regenerating ecosystems or adding value to your local community or buying local and so forth and so on, you take some of the power away from these central banks and from these central control posts that are embedded in a system and an establishment that is kind of destroying our planet right now. And we're all part of it, and we are at the very beginning of seeing different ways of governing ourselves and financial systems that allow for peer-to-peer instead of top-down organizational structures.
Okay, Jacob, thanks a lot for that. I just want to throw it out there again. Jacob's article is called Regenerative Solutions for the Future of Humanity. And that's on HuffPost. I suggest you go over there and read it. He's got a bunch of really great links to a bunch of the things he's talking about here as well. So before I let you go, Jacob, I know that you're not here very long. You're actually headed back out into the world again. But I'm just wondering if you could just briefly let me know, what do you got coming up?
Actually, right now, I'm very excited. We're getting a little bit of a break. The fall is here and the winter's coming.
So some relaxation.
Well, a little bit of relaxation. Also, the group of us involved with Unify are doing some deep cleansing and restructuring of our organization, which is much needed because it kind of grew so fast and became so successful that we've been struggling to keep up with it organizationally. So this is going to be a really good time for transforming our group organization from the inside out. And, you know, I want to thank you, Jeff, for making stickers for Unify and,
my pleasure.
And all your support over the years, even though you're not a direct member of the working group of Unify, you are exemplary of the Unify community because you're someone who is innovating and taking art and media in a way to shape the culture in a better way moving forward, a more conscious, more kind and compassionate way. So you're noticed in that regard, and we're always really grateful for that, and looking forward to the next chapter all the way around, and I need some rest, and I'm very excited about that.
Right on, Jacob. Well, safe travels to you wherever you may head out to next, and thanks again for stopping by and doing another episode of Rootscast with me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening and being a part of what we're doing here at Root Concepts. If you were inspired by what you heard, click the link in the show notes and enter your information so we can send you more great messages like the one you just heard. Until next time, this is Jeff Daverman signing off. Thank you for listening. Peace.